Dane. This is an interview with Dr. Charles E. Reed of General Electric Company at Columbia University Faculty House on Friday, the 11th of July, 1986. Charlie, you want to say a few words about your trip down here today just to test the mic? Everything worked okay?
Everything worked okay. I came down yesterday to attend the convention on IBM and compatible personal computers down at the Javits Center. And if you haven't been there yet, I'm sure you'll enjoy seeing it. This was a very good convention for somebody interested in a personal computer.
Okay, let's see how it works. Let's see if we can get started with something about your early life and your early career. I guess everybody would like to know from you where you're from, what your early life was like, a little bit that you can tell us about parents and family, and perhaps draw you into some thoughts on how you were perhaps predisposed towards science and technology in your early days.
Well, I was born and raised in Findlay, Ohio. We lived within just a block of a small liberal arts college in Findlay, Findlay College. I left Findlay in 1930 after having graduated from Findlay High School and went to Case School of Applied Science, as it was known at that time, in Cleveland. My parents continued to live in Findlay, with my father passing away in 1957. My mother stayed on until her death in 92 last year, and I've maintained ties with Findlay. My brother and I have just funded a scholarship in honor of our mother at that little college. I was always I was interested in science because I was very fortunate in high school to have some very good teachers in mathematics, physics, and in chemistry, and I think that predisposed me to engineering. A number of prominent Findlay residents had gone to school at Case because Findlay was the headquarters of what was of the Marathon Oil Company, then known as the Ohio Oil Company. And the president of the company at that time, O.D. Donnell, had graduated from Case School of Applied Science in 1905. So I had influences on me to attend that school. Also, I was fortunate in being able to get a scholarship, competitive merit scholarship from Case that took me through 4 years during a depression that really I never realized was in progress, to the degree that one later looks back and reads about it.
Before we get off the case, were you, either of your parents involved in science or industry? Or
No. On my mother's side, her father was a physician, and my father came from a family of farmers in Ohio and then entered the banking field.
Mm-hmm.
So no real science in the family, except for medicine.
Mm-hmm. Brothers and sisters?
I have a brother, 8 years younger than I, who studied medicine and is a clinical professor of pediatric radiology at Wayne State University,
mm-hmm.
and head of the radiological department at Children's Hospital in Detroit. So he has gone into the scientific field. Very good radiologist.
Did you think about a career in medicine at all?
I thought about it. Talked about it because a number of my friends in high school went into medicine, but I was more attracted to science and engineering.
When you were at Case, were you more interested in pure science, chemistry, rather than engineering and chemical engineering? Or
well, Case was oriented in those days considerably more to engineering than it was to science. And again, I was fortunate in having some very good professors in applied chemistry and chemical engineering that just kept me infused with interest in chemical engineering. One in particular, a Dr. Carl F. Crutton, who was later head of the Department of Chemical Engineering at Case, and then went into industry, was particularly influential on me because he was really one of the great combination applied chemists, chemical engineers in the country, and one of the best I've ever known.
It's a small world. I knew Crutton by his textbook, which was a world famous physical chemistry textbook.
Crutton and Marin.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's even more interesting coming from that kind of a background.
Well, Crutton, Marin was a good teacher, but Crutton was in a class by himself as a combination chemical engineer, applied chemist, and very inventive. I mean, the fellow had dozens of patents.
Was Crutton the reason that you went to graduate school rather than go out and get yourself a job?
Well, I would say Crutton and the head of the department at that time, Dr. William Beasy, and others in the chemistry, chemical engineering department at that time. Mm-hmm. But it was obvious to me that with my interest in chemical engineering that I ought to go on to graduate school, and then I was fortunate at the time in being able to get what in those days was a very liberal fellowship, the Tau Beta Pi graduate fellowship. It paid $1,000 a year, which was enough to go for a year.
So you didn't actually interview with any companies?
No, I didn't. I had made up my mind to go on to graduate school. I had always looked forward to chemical engineering at MIT because I was familiar with their School of Chemical Engineering practice.
Mm-hmm. How did that come about?
Well, I was simply aware that in graduate work in chemical engineering, MIT was outstanding because the whole field of unit operations was originated at MIT by Walker and W.K. Lewis, who wrote the original textbook on principles of chemical engineering, which was the theory of the unit operations as they were identified in those days, back in the 20s and 30s.
When you got to MIT, that would have been 1934.
Yeah, fall of 34.
Right in the heart of the Depression. What was it like being at MIT in those days?
Well, I can't say that there was much of a shock in going from Case to MIT. Except that I see much more of a contrast as I look back on it than as I saw it at the time. When I look back on it, Case, and I ought to turn off the recorder at this time, but the same would apply to a number of other schools, I think. Case had not really yet, in terms we would call modern today, modernized its curriculum in the 1930s. Now, I certainly think I got a very good education at Case. Certainly it inspired me to go on and gave me enough of a basis so that I was able to do pretty well at MIT.
Well, as I look back, it could have done a lot better. For instance, they ran a physics course with a general physics course without calculus, if you can imagine that.
No.
Yeah. And I had calculus, of course, at Case, but it was not integrated into the general physics curriculum. Now, if you went on to advanced physics, of course, and majored in physics, well, of course, obviously they had fundamental mathematical physics, but not to the other engineers who were taking physics simply as a requirement.
Did you have a strong mathematical background from
No, case? I didn't. I should have had I suffer from what I call a really good mathematical background. But I've always been very interested in mathematics and was good enough in mathematics to work on the original edition of this book.
Yeah.
And I've had a lifelong interest in mathematics and have continued my own mathematical education, but when I think of what it could have been compared to what it is, it could have been a lot better.
Yeah.
Taken the years to really understand or feel that I have an understanding of mathematical fundamentals.
What kinds of collegial relationships developed while you were at MIT? Were you close with your professors?
Yes. I was, again, in my opinion, very fortunate to go to MIT at a time when they just had absolutely outstanding faculty. And in particular, I can recall all of them. Warren K. Lewis, who again is in a class by himself, a very different man from Prutton, but a great applied chemist and chemical engineer, great teacher, and a great industrial consultant. And McAdams, who was really the world authority on heat transfer at that time. Sherwood, who became a particularly good friend of mine, who was really pioneering the quantitative treatment of absorption and extraction, and a rising young star at that time by the name of Ed Gilliland, who again was absolutely one of the best combination chemist, chemical engineer I've ever known. And that judgment continues until this day, and I've met a lot of them in the meantime. But Lewis and Gilliland just simply stand out among all the people I have known.
Influenced you.
So I was very fortunate in, and the curriculum at MIT was so very good because I think of Lewis. For example, there was a course in called Economic Balance in Chemical Industry. Well, this was a course that really considered plant design from an overall point of view, a chemical engineering point of view, a chemical point of view, and superposed on it all was the economic balance, how you could optimize the plant on any criteria you selected, including all of the economic criteria. And this course had basic cost accounting principles in it that have stood me in good stead to this day and were just excellent as I got into the General Electric Company, because a lot of people just never had them. Mm-hmm. So I would say that I was so fortunate at MIT in having curricula that were really ahead of their times as far as engineering, economic engineering, practical plant
design from the economic point of view is concerned.
Would you say that perhaps that was unique to MIT because of the...
Well, I really shouldn't say because I wasn't familiar with other curricula at that time, but I'm sure it was... It was
the Sloan School, of course, would have
didn't even exist then. I mean, MIT had a Department of Economics, and that was it.
Yeah,
under Dewey. But they had integrated economics with chemical engineering in that department. I'm sure they did it in other MIT departments too.
Charlie, did people like McAdams and Gilliland and Lewis end up involved with General Electric because of these early...
Well, I can come to a little bit of that later. The answer is, briefly at this point in the interview, that I was able to retain Lewis as a consultant for a number of years to GE and Gilliland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's get back to that.
What about your peers at the time, the graduate students?
Well, I look back, that again was a great thing about MIT, because the average of the graduates there, again, was really outstanding. And it was really at the beginning of what I call the golden age in chemical engineering. Chemical engineering really was of vital importance in the development of the oil industry and the petrochemical industry, because those industries depended on large-scale chemical unit operation in manufacturing, distillation, heat transfer, absorption, and extraction were the main things, and the chemical engineers were the ones who were expert in those, in plant design and operation. And Lewis, as a consultant to Standard Oil of New Jersey at that time, was just outstanding. One of the things Lewis pioneered in was fluid bed technology, where the oil industry was just entering the period of catalytic of the use of catalysts. They had thermal cracking that had been developed back in the 20s. The old Burton process, universal oil products, came into catalysts in the 30s, where you used a catalyst in a fixed bed and passed the vapors through a fixed bed at high temperatures and pressures and got a much higher yield of gasoline hydrocarbons than in thermal cracking. And then they developed, Lewis pioneered in the use of the fluid bed, where the catalyst is not fixed, but it's simply a mass of particles of catalyst particles, and you simply blow the gases up through this boiling mass of particles and get much better mass transfer and much better heat transfer. And that was a very thrilling process at the time, which was really applied to many other chemical processes. And I'm maybe getting a little ahead of my story, but I was so fortunate to be exposed to that development, because as I came with General Electric, it was obvious that that was the way to go about making silicone monomers, the methyl chlorosilanes from silicon and methyl chloride. But another strand of my education at MIT related to polymers and colloid chemistry. I became interested, it was necessary after passing my oral exams in 35 to select a thesis. And I was as much chemically inclined as inclined to chemical engineering, and MIT had a new professor coming on board in the fall of 35, whom I met and who convinced me that I ought to do a thesis in colloid chemistry. And Lewis had always been interested in colloid chemistry. He was particularly interested in the colloid chemistry of clays because he had done consulting on petroleum production research as well as catalytic research in refining, and clays are useful in both connections. So he encouraged me to go on with the thesis in clays, and my thesis was on the effect of particle size on the thixotropy of bentonite clay. Thixotropy, you may recall from colloid chemistry, is an isothermal reversible sol gel transformation. In other words, I have a suspension of these clay particles, fluid, in a test tube, and I let it sit. And in a few seconds or a few minutes, it will go to a gel, and I can invert the test tube. It won't flow. Mm-hmm. And this is the speed of transfer from sol to gel is a function of particle size. The smaller the particles at a given concentration, the more rapid it changes. This phenomenon is very important in drilling muds, mm-hmm.
Sure.
which were used, beginning to be used in deeper drilling in the 30s to control the pressure in drilling oil wells. So that got me interested in, I was interested in colloid chemistry, and it's just one step from there to polymer chemistry.
Did you attack this experimentally or theoretically or both?
Well, this was attacked experimentally. Mm-hmm. Experimentally, and we had a qualitative picture then of what was going on, but I had to develop a method of fractionating the bentonite clay into various particle sizes, and it was done in what was called a super centrifuge in those days. Imagine a cylinder, a long narrow cylinder, which is rapidly rotating about a vertical axis. You feed your suspension of clay particles in the bottom, and it flows up with the centrifuge rotating in the meantime, and the coarser particles are thrown out at the bottom, and the finer they are, the greater the distance they're able to travel up the rotating bowl before they're thrown out on the wall, mm-hmm. so that you have a way of separating the fines from the coarse particles. And you can I had to develop equations for determining the particle size distribution of the clay that way, and was able through a series of fractionations to actually make enough quantity of the various particle sizes in order to carry out the tests on the sol gel transformations.
Mm-hmm.
And we published a couple of papers on that. I don't know whether I thought it's not important for your purposes anyway. But it was a very interesting study. It took about a year to do the experimental work, and then in 1937, I was offered an instructorship, and I finished writing the thesis that year and received a degree in 1937 from MIT. But it was only a step from the colloid chemistry of clay over polymers. Clay is a polymer, the way we look at it today, an inorganic polymer, three-dimensional inorganic polymer. And bentonite, yeah, particularly interesting one. I haven't studied the current picture of bentonite in recent years,
But my guess is it hasn't changed a great deal.
Might as well.
Because it's so interesting as it's a sheet, a number of sheets on top of each other, and water and ions can flow in between these sheets and attach themselves to the aluminosilicate structure and swell the thing to enormous dimensions.
Were you more interested in the practical aspects of your research versus the theories?
Well, again, I'll tell you again. Now, this is, again, is very interesting. I was more interested in just going down the line on this particular subject. Now, it so happened that I, in order to study some of these things, I would throw a solution onto a glass plate and let it dry, and in order to be able to cut off strips from that plate and measure them and get their weight, and that's the way I determined the weight of particles thrown out at the bottom and those thrown out at the top, because they would be thrown out against the wall and they would stay there as sort of a gel. Then I had a liner in this centrifuge bowl that I could pull out, and here, as I unrolled that to a flat surface, here beginning at the bottom was a layer of particles that were heavy, and at the top a layer that were light, and in drying them then, I could peel those off and weigh them. Well, I didn't think much at the time when those films of bentonite clay were peeled off that there might be some practical application for those films. But Professor Hauser, who was my mentor in this research, was very practically minded, and he saw immediately that here might be some films that would have practical value, particularly in the field of insulation. And he brought them to the attention of Dr. Whitney, and who was still somewhat active in the lab at that time, and Marshall, and over in Schenectady, and I was not involved in that at all, but they were instrumental in inspiring Marshall to set up a program on bentonite as a insulating material.
A thermal insulator?
Electrical. And they actually, he had, do you remember Jim Marsden? Have you heard that name in connection with early?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
At that time, Marsden was in charge of the program, and they even had a name for the material called Alcifil. Alcifil.
Now, were you involved in this at all?
And I was not involved.
Did you know what was going on?
I knew that there was a general interest over there, but at that time I was in both, as far as teaching was concerned, I was in both chemistry, chemical engineering, and applied chemistry, and applied mathematics. So I didn't pay too much attention to it. I was very, you might say, naive, or knew nothing at all about the way graduate students today up there would start a venture capital company at that time. Maybe I would. Looking back on it, though, I'm very, very fortunate that I didn't fall in love with Alcifilm at that time, as I'm sure I would have if I know what I know now today and was encountering a new film material like that. I would have delved into it and, you know, thought maybe here I could make my first $1 million.
Yeah.
But it really, to sum up the whole thing, it never amounted to anything. It was an exciting thing at the time for a lot of people, and they did a lot of chemistry on it. It never amounted to a thing. They got quite a few patents on it. And it all went back to that work of mine when I was peeling those strips off of that
centrifuge liner. If I had have been very interested in it, I would never have gone with the General Electric Company. I'd have been with somebody else, and it would have been a dead end, really.
Well, I say a dead end, that particular thing. I don't know where I'd have been, but I probably wouldn't have been as happy as I was with you.
Let's take a short break and change the tape.